charter, so if you need any advice, I'm here for you. I stared at her blankly, unable to draw enough breath to respond. You know, if you need any tips, why on earth would I come to you for sex tips? I spluttered. She shrugged as she zipped the back of my dress. Well, I've been married to your father for more than 30 years, and he's happy as a clam. Stop, Mama. Sometimes he likes it when I... Oh, my God. Isn't this a situation where hysterical deafness is called for? Jenny came into the room carrying a little velvet pouch. When she saw the look on my face, she snickered. Mama tried to give you the wives need to learn special tricks lecture, didn't she? She asked, desperately trying to repress a smile, and failing miserably. I am just trying to share some wifely wisdom with you, Mama said, her hands on her hips. Smart asses. You've been branded a smart ass. Welcome to my world, I told Jenny. She pulled a face and went to the mirror to put on lip gloss. Now that you're done ridiculing your mother, Mama said, eyeing me sternly, I'm going to give you your wedding present. She opened the jeweler's pouch and pulled out a little sapphire pendant that had belonged to our paternal grandmother, Grandma Pat. She carefully draped it around my neck and clasped it. Your grandmother gave me this to wear on my wedding day. Jenny wore it on hers, and now you're wearing it on yours. And since you're the youngest girl in the family and Jenny doesn't plan on having any more children, we'd like you to keep it. But what about the boys? When they get married, their wives might want this. I watched Jenny's face carefully. The distribution of family heirlooms had been a major issue of contention between us over the years. As in, she actually sued me over a family Bible. But she seemed perfectly fine with the idea of this little piece of family history remaining with me. Let's just wait and see if I like the girls they marry, she said. So, that means your dress is new and the necklace is old and blue. What can you borrow? A time machine so I could go back before Mama's sex lecture and never have to hear it? Oh, shush, Mama said, slapping at my shoulder. Borrow my bracelet. She unsnapped the thin gold bangle from around her wrist and clipped it around mine. Ingrates, the both of you. She did the same thing to me on my wedding day. Only we were in the church's changing room, which made it so much worse for some reason, Jenny said, shuddering. You couldn't have warned me? Where's the fun in that? I think I liked it better when you two didn't get along, Mama muttered. Jenny and Mama scurried out to check on the groom and company and make sure they were strapped into their tuxes. Jolene and Andrea accompanied them, for the boys' sake. I turned to look in the mirror and gasped. I actually looked like a bride. My hair gently framed my face, the chestnut color setting off the pale gray lawn of my veil. My wide, honey-hazel eyes were subtly outlined and winked out from my face like stars. My mouth looked soft and flushed. Andrea and Jenny had outdone themselves. I stared at the mirror, unable to believe that the elegant, beautiful bride reflected back at me was, in fact, me. You look just gorgeous, baby doll. Aunt Jetty materialized at my side, peering over my shoulder in the mirror. I am so very happy for you. Thanks, Aunt Jetty. I'm so glad you got to be here today, I said, even if you can't be in the photos. I love you very much, Jane, she said, her lip trembling. I want you to remember that, always. I love you too, Aunt Jetty. Are you all right? I'm fine, she said. I've just got a case of the wedding misties. I'm going to go downstairs and see to Gilbert before I blubber ectoplasm all over you. She abruptly popped out of view. Frowning, I turned back to the mirror and fiddled with my veil. I wondered exactly how far I would get into the evening before I caught it on something or inadvertently set it on fire. I heard the door open behind me. I said, Mama, if you try to gift me with a wifely copy of the Kama Sutra, I'll jump out that window. I sniffed and immediately caught the scent of woods and tobacco and motor oil. I was overwhelmed with panicked thought bubbles. He had to get the female out of the house. He had to get her out without being noticed. It was pure stupid luck that he'd managed to snag one of the rental company uniforms. Now he just had to knock me out and stuff me into the bag and get out before Gabriel realized that his bride had been snatched. I turned to find a burly man in dark blue overalls standing in my bedroom. He was holding what looked like a green canvas body bag. This was not going to end well for my wedding dress. I sighed. Hello, Ray. Chapter 18. Your child will be tempted to approach people from his or her former life, perhaps to seek vengeance for a perceived or actual wrong. Do your best to keep your child distracted from this. Hunting, special treats, board games, hobbling, whatever it takes. Siring for the Stupid, a beginner's guide to raising newborn vampires. Ray McElroy had had some hard days since he'd gotten out of prison. He had the same dark, curling hair, although it had been cut short from his former mullet. The same dark brown eyes, but there were now dark circles under them, and deep lines creased around his mouth. His face was a little heavier, puffed up from starchy jailhouse food.
I don't know what you're talking about, ma'am,
he said, his voice polite and even.
But I'd appreciate it if you turned around real slow.
Sighing again, I cracked my neck and removed my veil. You can leave now, unhurt, or you can stay, and you will not walk away happy. He reached into the body bag and pulled out what looked like a potato gun, loaded with dozens of pencils.
I think I've got a better than average shot at it.
Dozens of freshly sharpened pencils were aimed straight at my chest. That did even things out a bit. Let me ask you something. When you set about to make something like that, what exactly goes through your head? He shrugged.
Mostly boobs, beer, this will be cool, boobs, beer.
I bit my lip, because laughing didn't seem appropriate at the moment. Well, you're honest.
I don't want to ruin that pretty dress, ma'am, but I need you for something important that I have planned for your man, so I'd appreciate it if you would hold still.
I'm bait again. Why am I always bait? I groaned. At the very least, he was the most polite kidnapper I'd had so far.
Kind of poetic, isn't it?
Ray asked, smiling almost proudly.
A bride goes missing on her wedding day. The groom runs to her rescue only to be cut down himself. That's the sort of thing they used to write country songs about before country got all sparkly.
I don't know what you've been told about vampires, but I'm not going to just... He stepped closer, moving slowly and carefully.
Now, this has nothing to do with the fact that you're undead. Hell, I respect you as a predator, but I also know that a good predator can't be separated from its mate.
I'm a vampire, not a timber wolf. He pulled a capped hypodermic needle from his pocket.
Well, your fella killed my brother, and I got a bone to pick with him about it. If I have you, your Gabriel will come out into the open without all your friends and those damn vampire ninjas you have hanging outside your house.
He stepped within an arm's reach, pressing the pencil gun right over my heart. Please don't do this, I pleaded.
Tilt your head, if you would, ma'am,
Ray said, sliding that needle toward my jugular.
I'm about to stick you with a shitload of horse tranquilizers, and I don't want to splatter any arterial spray on that pretty dress.
I really can't talk you out of this? I asked, wincing as the needle pierced my skin. He shook his head and tisked, sadly.
Afraid not.
My skin flushed hot as the drugs moved through my system with alarming speed. The edges of my vision blurred, and my eyes rolled up as my knees went out from under me. I felt Ray's hands catch me before I hit the ground, and the canvas bag moved over my face. I hated being the damsel in distress. For one thing, I was really bad at it. I was always antagonizing my captors. I would say something smart-assed and end up making them try to kill me ahead of schedule. Inevitably, I ended up with a head injury, and there are only so many concussions you can get without it affecting you long-term. With this in mind, I woke up slowly, stretching each of my fingers, then my arms and legs. This was weird in itself because I normally woke up with my arms tied behind my back, but it seemed that Ray was a consummate captor host. I opened my eyes to find that I was in a squat, dirty little room on a camp bed. My wrists and ankles were tied with bungee cords. At first, I thought that the cords were padded so they wouldn't chafe my arms, but I saw that the pads were wrapped in cheap-looking silver chains. If I squirmed or moved, the chains would tighten, slip around the padding, and burn the ever-loving hell out of my arms. I cleared my dry throat. I squinted and looked around the bare room. I thought I might be in an old hunting shack. Deer hunters built these little shanties in the middle of the woods so they could sleep outdoors in relative comfort, then just walk outside to hunt without having to drive. Mostly, it was an excuse to get away from their families so they could go out into the wilderness to drink and belch competitively. This particular bit of paradise looked as if it hadn't been used in quite a while. The walls were bare planks, with corrugated metal protecting the exterior. There was a single darkened window on the opposite wall. The floor was covered in those sample carpet squares that flooring stores used as display, duct taped together like a weird patchwork rug. And there was a calendar on the wall featuring Hooters' hottest waitresses from 1998. Charming. The door opened and Ray walked through. He'd shed the overalls and was wearing a pair of camo cutoffs and a t-shirt advertising the benefits of spring break in Daytona Beach. He had a pair of sparkly boxing gloves in his hands, which seemed unlikely.
"Damn, I thought you'd still be asleep," he said, frowning. "Y'all must break down horse tranks a lot faster than we do."
"Sorry to disappoint you. Why is my face sore?" I asked, stretching out my jaw and wincing at the pain.
"Well, I had you in the bag, and I was in a hurry to get you out of the house before your family noticed, and my shoulder slipped while I was carrying you down the stairs, and..."
"You dropped me down the stairs?" I cried.
"Well, you're heavier than you look,"
he exclaimed. "How is that supposed to make me feel better?" I grumbled. "How did people not notice that?"
"I told them you were soiled linens," he said.
I balked, and he quickly added,
"Look, I'm really sorry about this."
He adjusted my bungee cords, being careful to stay outside of my lunging distance. "How did you even track Gabriel down?" I asked. "How did you know he killed Bud?" He pulled a camp chair next to the bed.
"As soon as I got out of jail, I went out to Bud's deer stand. I'd read the newspaper story about him dying, saw the coroner's report. I don't care what the coroner says. There's no way that kind of damage could occur from a tree just falling over on somebody. Bud and I picked that tree out ourselves when we built the deer stand. There was no rot, no weak spots. There was no way it was going to just fall over. There was obviously some sort of supernatural force at work. So, I wondered, who could be strong enough to push over a tree? At first, I thought it might be Bigfoot. Plenty of people have tried to hunt that bastard down, and it involves a lot of tracking equipment that just wasn't in my budget. It was smarter to work with monsters I could locate and eliminate them as suspects."
"I think that offends me on a couple of levels." He ignored me.
"So, I went to the cellar. I knew that it was a place where vampires hung out, so I spent a couple of nights there, kept my ears open. And before you knew it, I heard the story about some asshole vamp who pushed a tree on top of a drunk hunter."
He smiled, the expression of bitter mockery of mirth.
"I guess for y'all, that's right up there with flowers and chocolates, huh?"
"You don't understand."
"I don't have to understand,"
he yelled, standing so quickly that the chair toppled back.
"Your boyfriend killed my brother for you, so you're gonna watch him die. As he crumbles into dust, he's going to look in your eyes and know that all his vampire eternal life bullshit has just evaporated into nothing. That you're going to live on forever without him and probably start banging some other vamp within a few months."
He looked down as he saw how horrified I was.
"I'm sorry for the language, ma'am."
"Well, I'm sorry we blew up your bus," I said. "Though I'm pretty sure you set that up yourself."
"Don't worry about it. I abandoned that place as soon as your guys followed me from the dude's strip bar. I started living here at Bud's hunting shack."
"You hoped that we would see the body, accidentally blow it up and assume that you were dead?" I asked.
"Yes, ma'am. I took the body from the hospital morgue. You'd be amazed what people will let you do when you're wearing scrubs."
"And now I'm thankful I have no further need of the healthcare system," I sighed. "You know, you're holding me hostage. You might as well call me Jane. All of the other arch-villains do."
"Jane, then."
"And for the record, I won't be banging some other vampire anytime soon," I told him. "I have a feeling that if you force me to watch Gabriel die, I would probably spend the next few months hunting you down and staging your death via deer stand."
"I won't hold it against you,"
he promised. "I don't get it. I don't get how you can be so resigned to lifelong grudges. You seem like a reasonably intelligent person. What makes you think it's okay to do this?
Because if I don't, I'm just like everybody else. You have no idea what it's like growing up the way I did. A McElroy, a charity case, a loser. My mama and daddy both went to jail before I even started school. No one expected anything good of me. Hell, the only time anybody ever treated me like I was something special was when I was playing football. But Bud was always there. When people whispered, when we walked by at the grocery store, he kept his hand on my shoulder. Every single game I played, he was in the stands. And yeah, I realized that he wasn't perfect. He was a drunk and a gambler, and he hadn't held a steady job and no one knew how long. But if I let what your boyfriend did stand, then that means I gave up on him, just like everybody else did.
Look, I know you think you're doing the right thing by Bud, but you have to understand.
No more talking,
he growled suddenly. He pulled another syringe out of his pocket and jabbed it into my neck. I yelped as he forced the drugs into my vein, sending a burning sensation blazing under my skin. Asshole, I muttered as I slid under the surface of unconsciousness. My eyes fluttered open. Gabriel was standing over me, untying my hands, his expression grim.
Hey there, sweetie. I'm glad to see you, I slurred. No, wait, you're not supposed to see me in my dress. It's bad luck.
I dare you to try to find worse luck than ours, Jane.
Good point, I muttered. I looked around the dingy little room. Where's Ray?
Waiting for me outside. He said it would hurt me more if I had the chance to say, did he hurt you?
I shook my head and immediately regretted it. My head hurt. A lot. Not intentionally. He's pretty polite for a kidnapper. Hates your ass, though. He thinks my dress is pretty.
It's gorgeous, sweetheart,
he assured me, pushing my mussed hair back from my face. Take me home.
Right now, he promised.
How did you even find me?
He frowned. Ray left me a very helpful note on your vanity. It said you were dead, unless I met him at these GPS coordinates within an hour.
You walked right into a trap? Isn't that my job?
It wasn't exactly a trap, he said as I sat up.
It felt like swimming to the surface of a dark pool, my brain clearing the last few inches of murkiness and finally coming into focus.
And he did leave a sizable lock of your hair behind as an incentive.
How sizable? I asked, feeling the back of my head and finding a golf ball-sized spot shorn to the scalp. Damn it, Ray!
Gabriel pulled me to my feet and steadied my elbows when I bobbled. I felt a low, heavy tug on my skirt and heard a rip. I moaned. My hem caught on a nail in the floor.
Oh, come on! I cried. I turned, trying to dislodge my skirt, and gasped as the material split even wider, leaving a gap that nearly reached my cleavage. I looked up, horrified at what I'd done to the replacement dress. I doubted that I could talk Jolene's aunts into making a second one.
We can...
I grabbed his face between my palms and kissed him deeply. No. No postponements. No delays. I think we both knew this was how our wedding was going to turn out one way or the other. I just really want to marry you.
He chuckled and kissed me. I love you. And when you step outside, I want you to go to Dick just as fast as you can move. Zeb slowed him down a bit, but he should be here any minute. He's going to get you home. I'll meet you there as soon as I can.
I eyed him speculatively. Do you really think I'm going to buy that and just toddle off home to wait on you like some Scarlett O'Hara wannabe?
Well, the dress is appropriate.
Don't try to distract me with your intentional historical inaccuracies, I insisted. Now tell me what's going on.
Ray wants to kill me.
All right, so what's the plan?
I don't have one, he confessed. This is a person who wants me dead. He wants you to watch as he kills me. And he's not going to stop until that happens. He's going to keep coming after you. I can't let that happen.
So your plan is to let Ray kill you?
Unless I manage to kill him in hand-to-hand combat, yes. And given his impressive array of improvised weaponry, I think he has an above-average chance.
I scoffed. This is the dumbest plan I've ever heard. Zeb could come up with a better plan than this.
Jane, I'm only trying to prepare you.
No, I do not accept this. No, I yelled. I shoved past him, my ruined dress trailing behind me as I kicked open the hunting shack door. Ray was waiting outside, his pencil gun strapped to his leg. When he saw Gabriel and me emerge, he cocked the shotgun he was holding and aimed it at my throat as I stomped toward him. Ray, what the hell are you doing? I demanded.
Jane, I know you're upset, but if you step any closer, I'll blow your head off.
You're gonna need more than that shotgun, Ray, I growled. It's loaded with silver shot, Gabriel murmured. Well, I guess that means we can't be friends anymore, I said. Look, I know you're upset about Bud-
Upset? Nightingale killed my brother!
Ray yelled, turning on Gabriel.
Don't even try to deny it.
You're right,
Gabriel said, gently nudging me out of the way.
I won't try to deny it. I killed him. But do you know what your brother did?
It doesn't matter. It's a matter of honor.
Gabriel cleared his throat, pushing me aside even farther with a bump of his hips.
I'll try to put this in terms you understand. He killed my woman.
Ray looked to me as if to confirm it. I nodded my head.
Liar! You're a damned liar!
He shouted, his gun barrel bobbing precariously close to Gabriel's face.
Bud was a lot of things, but he wouldn't hurt a woman. He wasn't the type.
No, but he was the type to get rip-roaring drunk and then do something stupid, right?
Gabriel countered.
He shot her. He was drunk. He thought she was a deer, and he shot her. And then he just drove away and left her for dead. He just left her, like an animal, to die alone in the dark.
You're lying,
he roared.
He wouldn't do that. Well, he might. Oh, who the hell cares? The point is, you killed my brother, and now I'm gonna kill you.
Oh, come on, Ray, I cried. Ray was advancing on Gabriel. I stepped in the way, placing a restraining hand on his chest. The other hand was busy pushing Gabriel back.
Jane, get out of the way.
Gabriel, cut it out. He's too stupid to kill, I yelled.
Hey,
Ray said. His tone hurt as he scrambled against my grip.
Ray, I'm trying to help you out here,
I hissed, shoving both of them back a few steps. Look, I'm not defending what Gabriel did to Bud. In fact, when I found out about it, I beat the absolute tar out of him. Ray arched an eyebrow and bent sideways so he could smirk at Gabriel.
You let your woman beat on you?
Gabriel rolled his eyes.
Have you met my fiancé?
I cleared my throat pointedly, and their attention refocused on me. It took me a long time to get over my part in Bud's death. I felt responsible. Please, don't make me responsible for your death, too, because he will kill you. No matter what you throw at him, no matter what you do, if you put me in danger, he's going to kill you. I get the feeling that you would do the same. Don't put more blood on my hands. Please. You don't have the stomach for this.
How would you know?
Because the kind of man who would want to protect a girl's wedding dress isn't going to murder someone in cold blood. You could have killed me at the house and left a little pile of ash for Gabriel to find. Hell, even when you shot him with an arrow, you missed your mark. You've had chance after chance to kill us, Ray. Your heart's not in this. I'm sorry you lost someone you loved. Gabriel did what he did because Bud hurt me, because he thought he was protecting the people Bud could hurt. And really, you tried to run me down, hit a kid, and I had to turn him into a vampire. We're practically even.
What are you talking about?
The old sedan that hit Jamie Lanier in front of my shop. You were behind the wheel. Ray looked insulted.
Never happened.
I have a hard time believing that.
I don't give a shit what you believe,
he retorted.
Nightingale killed the only family I have left. It's a blood debt, and it has to be paid.
I sighed. Well, if that's true, then you might as well kill me, too, because I'll just have to come after you. And on until everyone we love is just collateral damage to this grudge. Let it end with us, please.
Why?
Because I can't handle another fight to the death. We seem to have them once a year lately, and it's not a tradition I want to continue.
I can't just drop it now. I tried to kill you a bunch of times.
Contrary to what the movies would have you believe, it's actually pretty hard to do, I told him, somewhat sympathetically.
Yeah, well, I can't take that back. I can't just forget about it. What kind of brother would that make me? I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I just walked away. And it's not like vampires are known for their all-forgiving ways. Damn it, Nightingale, I kidnapped your woman on her wedding day. Hell, even if you let me live, she'll probably kill me for that alone.
As Gabriel argued with him over my lack of desire for the usual avenues of womanly vengeance, Zeb and Dick burst into the clearing.
Jane, would you like to know what you're getting for Christmas this year?
Dick asked, as Zeb huffed and puffed beside him.
We're going to put one of those LoJack chips under your skin, like they do for dogs. It will cut down on our search time.
I would find that insulting, but clearly it's deserved, I grumbled. Where are Andrea and Jolene?
At your place, restraining your mother, Zeb said. We convinced them that it was the most logical use of their strength and not at all a sexist thing.
That's Ray McElroy?
Dick asked incredulously. You know him? I asked.
Oh, sure. I see him down at the cellar all the time. Calls himself Scooter, he said. Heck of a pool player, but he sucks at darts.
So you've spent a lot of time with this guy recently? He shrugged.
Sure. I've mostly gone legit since Andrea, but I still like going out for a beer and visiting Norm once in a while.
Let me ask you something, Dick. In the course of these manly bonding activities, did you ever drink a little bit?
Sure,
Dick said. Ever drink enough to tell tales about your friends? I asked as realization dawned on his face. Maybe talk about this sickeningly happy couple you know who won't stop talking about the fact that the first time they had sex resulted from an argument they had about the guy pushing a tree on top of a drunk redneck? Dick's face went pale and almost cheesy green.
I will never drink again, he promised.
Janie, I swear. I didn't know. I wouldn't do anything to screw up my friendship with you two. You and Andrea and Spazzy McGee over there are my family, and I haven't had that in a very long time.
I know, I said, squeezing his hand. Now we just have to convince Gabriel. Dick cleared his throat and stepped between Gabriel and Ray as they argued over how best to settle their debt.
How about dueling pistols? He suggested.
I stared at him. What?
You're right, Jane, Zeb conceded. Not quite fair. What with Gabe being able to survive gunshots and all. Knife fight? Nah, still not sporting.
How is this helping? I demanded. You are the worst best man ever.
Diffusing the situation?
Dick muttered before he said louder.
You're right, Jane. A duel to the death wouldn't be fair, no matter what weapon they used. Gabriel would have a clear advantage. He's faster, stronger. Even with your pencil gun, Ray, which is awesome, by the way, you wouldn't stand a chance. So, we let you beat on each other for a couple of hours. Gabriel feels like he's suffered for what he's done. Ray defends his family honor. Everybody walks away in time for Gabriel and Jane to get hitched. Hell, the boys will probably be bonded for life by the time the fight's over. Fisticuffs have a way of doing that.
Why are we friends? I asked him, only to have him give me that maddening grin.
I'm in,
Ray said.
Your friend's right. It's the most honorable way to go about it.
Gabriel lifted a brow.
Really?
Really? I echoed. We went from blood debt to fist fight? Ray nodded.
I know I probably don't have a chance in hell of beating you, and I can't guarantee that I won't try to stake you. But I think hitting you in that pretty face over and over will make me feel better.
Gabriel shrugged.
All right, then.
Boys are so stupid, I sighed. Gabriel pushed to his feet. I took his hands in mine. His mouth was pressed into a thin line. I really can't talk you out of this, I asked. I mean, we were supposed to be married, about an hour ago.
I think this is the only thing that will resolve the situation.
Well, I'll be over here, I muttered, leaning gingerly against a nearby tree, trying to solve the enigma of the male ego and how it can be cured.
No biting,
Dick said, standing between the two of them like Mills Lane on Celebrity Deathmatch.
No unfair use of claws or fangs. No gouging. No hidden wooden objects. You fight until somebody says uncle.
Face, meet my palm. Ray and Gabriel circled each other, cracking their necks in that weird masculine chicken fashion that's meant either to stretch the vertebrae or to intimidate your opponent into thinking you'll throw a kiss on him without warning. They tried to be impressive, to show each other up with acrobatics and fancy combinations. Ray had obviously spent a little time at the prison gym and had built up some impressive upper body strength, but it was still no match for Gabriel's speed and agility. At one point, Gabriel knocked him back onto the ground where Ray smacked his head on a rock. Gabriel made to help him up, and Ray used the gap in concentration to stab at Gabriel's chest with a broken tree branch. I shrieked in warning. For the record, when someone is fighting, screaming his name and distracting him is not a good idea. The branch missed its mark, sinking a few inches below Gabriel's collarbone. He yowled and dug it out and whacked Ray across the face, and then Ray kicked Gabriel off of him. Finally, they broke down to just punching each other in the face back and forth. I got bored and started trying to fix the rip in my dress. Gabriel tossed Ray into a nearby tree trunk. "Hey!" I exclaimed. "Keep it sporting! He's only human!" Gabriel protested.
"He kicked me in the..." "That was an accident!"
Ray wheezed, bending over and panting to catch his breath.
"You shoved me and my foot slipped!"
"Seriously, guys, can we wrap this up? I'd like to get married tonight," I demanded.
"Ray, do you feel like your family honor has been avenged?"
"Hold on a minute,"
Ray said, blowing out one last hard breath. He pivoted and kicked out at Gabriel, nailing him in the crotch. Gabriel grunted and fell to his knees.
"That's going to interfere with the honeymoon plans," Zeb said, shaking his head.
I glared at him. He threw up his hands in defense.
"Well, it is."
"That time was on purpose,"
Ray told Gabriel as he helped him to his feet.
"I feel better now."
"I'm so glad,"
Gabriel groaned, propping his hands on his knees to stay upright.
"And I've decided that we're even,"
Ray said. Gabriel's expression of hope was dashed when Ray added,
"If you turn me."
"Beg your pardon?"
"I want to be a vampire,"
Ray said.
"I thought about it before, but after seeing what y'all can do, how you move, how fast you are, I want in. I don't have any family left, no reason to stay human. I want to be what you are. I figure you owe me this."
"Wow, this sounds like a great way for the council to get really pissed at us," I said. Dick said, "Actually, as long as Ray is entering into it voluntarily and behaves himself after he's turned, the council shouldn't have a problem with it."
"Look at it this way. It's a life for a life,"
Ray implored.
"You took my brother's life. You're giving me one in return."
"Your brother took Jane's life," Gabriel countered.
"Which you returned when you turned her,"
Ray said.
"Do the same for me. Balance everything out."
"I've already got a teenager running around my house. I don't think I can handle a redneck renegade, too," I said.
"I'll do it,"
Dick piped up. We all turned to him in surprise.
"Ray finding you? That was my fault. I couldn't keep my big mouth shut. Gabe, you know I would never do anything to put you and Jane in danger."
Gabriel quirked a disbelieving eyebrow at him.
"Okay, fine. You know I would never do anything to put Jane in danger. But let me do this. Let me make up for my mistake. I can't handle you being pissed at me for another 100 years. You've got your hands full with Jamie, and I think I'd be a better fit for Ray's sire anyway."
"He has a point," I said. "If anyone could be more devious than Ray, it's Dick."
"Is this really the only way you'll consider us even?"
Gabriel asked. Ray considered it for a moment.
"Yes. It's kind of poetic. I like it. And Bud would probably think it was funny as hell."
"Dick, are you sure about this?" I asked. "This is a long-term commitment. I don't want you to feel obligated because of me."
"It's the least I can do," Dick said. "And I'll keep my promise. I'll stop drinking. As much. No more bars, no more shady dealings with shady people."
"Dick, we wouldn't want you to do that. Shady dealings with shady people, that's who you are. We don't want to change that. Just maybe avoid talking about our sex life with random drunks at the cellar. That would be a step in the right direction. And maybe conduct your side businesses at a coffee shop or some other location where there are sober people. The council likes using the Cracker Barrel."
"So, when are you doing this?" Zeb asked.
"Now,"
Bray said.
"I don't want to put this off. I might lose my nerve."
"We kind of have a thing to get to," I said, jerking my head in the direction of River Oaks. Dick patted my arm, trying to reassure me, but failing miserably.
"Actually, I can turn him now, drop him off at home to wait out the change, and then be at River Oaks by the time you're cleaned up and have your face back in order."
Over my shoulder, I saw Zeb and Gabriel waving their arms frantically and shaking their heads. I turned on them. "What do you mean?" Chapter 19. Never underestimate your child's resourcefulness. They may have skill sets that surprise you. Siring for the Stupid, A Beginner's Guide to Raising Newborn Vampires.
"It's not that bad,"
Gabriel assured me, putting his arm around my waist and leading me to the back of the house. We'd carefully driven around the dozen or so cars parked in front to keep our guests from seeing me, one, in the presence of my groom, and two, looking as if I'd been run through a wood chipper. Gabriel wouldn't let me look in the rearview mirrors in the car, and every time I looked as if I might catch a reflection in the window, Zeb threw his hands over my eyes from the back seat. I didn't take this as a good sign. My worst fears were confirmed as Gabriel led me through the kitchen to find my family sitting around the kitchen table.
"What did you do?"
Mama and Jenny chorused. "I'm fine, by the way," I grumbled.
"Oh, my gosh, Jane, have you been wrestling bears?"
Mama cried, rushing toward me.
"Yes, Mama. I took a little time out from my wedding prep to wrestle a few bears.
I figured a mani-pedi would be passé," I said, as she inspected what I suspected was a split lip and a black eye sustained when I was dropped on my face. Apparently, the horse tranquilizer slowed down our blood flow and therefore our ability to heal.
"Really?"
Jamie asked, grinning mischievously. Jenny took a moment to consider my snark.
"Yeah, she's just fine. We're running about 3 hours late. Jolene and Andrea have come up with every possible stall story imaginable, and Iris has kept the open bar freely flowing. What should we tell the guests now?"
Daddy asked.
"We could tell them she was adjusting her veil and fell out of a second-story window, but she'll be ready in just a few minutes,"
Zeb suggested.
"Hey,"
I frowned at him.
"People who know her would believe it,"
Mama said.
"Hey! We can convince them that Gabriel tried to ditch you at the altar, but you managed to run him down,"
Jolene said brightly as she hustled into the kitchen. She tisked at the damage to my dress and kissed my cheek.
"Statements like that are what got you into that dress." "I'm glad you're okay,"
Jolene said, rolling her eyes.
"Revenge is what got us into these dresses,"
Andrea snorted.
"Where's Dick?"
"He'll be here soon," I said. "Zeb and Gabriel can fill you in." Zeb gave me a squeeze before I was pulled up the back stairs by Mama and Jenny.
"We'll give them an explanation that doesn't end up embarrassing you."
"Thank you," I said, looking over my shoulder at Gabriel. "Love you."
"Love you,"
he called as I reached the second landing. In my room, Jenny pulled the dress carefully over my head and handed it to Jolene, who was already threading a needle with gray thread. Mama whipped a startling range of wet wipes from her purse, from stain fighting to makeup removing.
"We can fix this."
I turned toward the vanity mirror and shrieked. My black eye and split lip were slowly returning to normal, but there was a splotch of dried blood at the corner of my mouth and a wide smear of mascara across my cheek. My hair looked as if I'd been attacked by a badger. Mama had already started plucking pins from my hair. Jenny was dabbing at the blood, scrubbing at the mascara with a makeup-removing wipe. Within minutes, she had a fresh coat of powder and lipstick on my face and had reapplied my eye makeup. "Jen, remember all those times I asked God why I was cursed with an evil sorority princess for a sister?"
"Vividly,"
she retorted dryly.
"I take it back."
3 hours late, slightly disheveled, with a discreetly mended rip up the front of my wedding dress, I was led to the garden by my father and into the hands of my future husband. Andrea, Jolene, and Jenny had been released from their lemon-colored clothing prisons and were now tastefully dressed in dove-gray gowns with empire waists and pretty beaded sashes. They were so relieved they didn't even take the time to be angry with me over the ruse. Miraculously, Dick was waiting at the altar with the rest of the wedding party, having managed to slip into his vintage tuxedo t-shirt just in time. He explained later that he'd gotten some of Ray's blood on his dress clothes, but I knew he just liked to amuse me. Jamie was there, holding Fitz's leash. Zeb was at Gabriel's elbow, grinning brilliantly. I winked at him as I carefully walked down the aisle. Per Mama's wishes, I'd invited all of the aunts, uncles, and cousins, and to my unending shock, they all showed, with one expected exception. Jenny told me that Cousin June had boycotted the ceremony on principle. I think the principle was that I was dead and I was still getting married before her. But the rest of my relatives waved happily from my side of the aisle, meaning that Gabriel could anticipate Uncle Dave and Uncle Junior's traditional wedding reception speech entitled, "If you hurt our girl, we will whip your ass," only this time they would be adding, "Vampire or not?" Daddy placed my hand in Gabriel's and he beamed at me. He looked so handsome in his old-fashioned coat, the slightest hint of a healing bruise on his cheekbone. I wish I could say that I remember every detail of the ceremony, but all I remember is looking into Gabriel's eyes and smiling like a fool. It was a good thing we'd chosen simple vows because I doubt I could have repeated anything beyond I do. Jolene's uncle pronounced us man and wife, and we practically ran back down the aisle as our friends and families pelted us with white flower petals. Near the arbor, Aunt Jetty and Mr. Wainwright clapped and shouted, louder than the living. After the ceremony, we stayed up all night in true vampire style. Fortunately, the human guests had been occupied with the planned wedding dinner while I was indisposed, so we were able to get right to the fun stuff. The lanterns hung over the garden, their mellow light shining down on us as we laughed and drank. Gabriel and I didn't eat the cake, but we cut it for the human guests. Finally, just as dawn's pinkish fingers crept over the horizon, we were ready to go to rest for the day. We weren't planning to go away until the next night. I wanted my first night as a married woman to be spent under River Oaks's roof. We waved from the house's front porch as the human guests departed. Unused to being up so late, Jamie went upstairs half-conscious, sure that he was going to pass out before he could get to a light, tight space. Mama practically had to be carried to the car, while Jenny was good and toasted and tried to persuade Jolene and Zeb to find an after-hours club, or maybe a Denny's.
"And so, my lovely wife, you had a different wedding from most."
Gabriel chuckled, taking me for one last spin about the porch. "Yes, so few weddings begin with a duel and a vampiric blood-swapping agreement," I said. "Did Ray make it through the procedure?"
"Dick says he's resting comfortably at their home."
"I hope Andrea doesn't get too angry with him," I said. "She's basically going to be putting up with two of Dick."
"I have a feeling she will understand."
We turned to find Aunt Jetty and Mr. Wainwright waiting for us by the front door. They looked nervous and torn, not at all how someone attending a long-awaited wedding should appear. I carefully climbed the steps, lifting my train to prevent face plants on the porch. "Is everything okay?" I asked. "You two seem a little off tonight."
"Jane, it's time to go," Aunt Jetty said softly.
"Well, we're not leaving until tomorrow night, but we'll be back in a week." Mr. Wainwright's cool, misty palm slid over my clasped hands.
"No, dear. It's time for us to go."
Gabriel slipped an arm around my waist as I shook my head.
"Go where?" "Baby, it's time we moved on."
But no, I exclaimed. Eloquent, I know. Aunt Jetty smiled gently.
"We've known for a little while that we wanted to see what's on the other side, but I wouldn't have missed your big day for anything, so we stayed. Now I've seen everything I'd ever want to see. You're happy. You're exactly what and where you need to be. And I don't belong here anymore. I'm not afraid of what comes next. I'm eager to see what's waiting for me. And Gilbert says that we'll be able to stay together if we concentrate hard enough on each other."
"Is that why you've been so distant? Why you've spent so much time away from the house? You wanted us to get used to not having you around?" They nodded.
"But I'll miss you,"
I whispered as she trailed her hand down my face.
"Honey, you're a grown woman now. You don't need some silly old woman hanging around."
"No, but I want this silly old woman around," I protested. "Isn't that better?" She narrowed her eyes at me and shook her head.
"Oh, you're good.
What if you get up there and the only thing waiting for you is Grandma Ruthie's vengeful spirit preparing to annoy the hell out of you for eternity?" Jetty shuddered.
"Then we would do everything we could to find a way back."
"I really can't talk you out of this?" I asked. They shook their heads sadly. "You know what you've come to mean to me, right?" I asked Mr. Wainwright.
"Not nearly as much as you've come to mean to me. I love you very much, Jane. I wouldn't be able to leave this plane without knowing that you were here to care for the people and things I love."
"Does that include me?"
I heard Dick's voice behind my shoulder as he joined us. Mr. Wainwright's hands came up to cup Dick's cheeks.
"Of course. I have few regrets, but one of them is not being able to spend more time with you.
I hope you're not disappointed in your grandson for wanting a little rest.
Never, Dick said. I haven't had a lot of achievements in my life, things that I know I did right. Watching you grow up, helping you along the way, I know that was something to be proud of.
I love you, too, Andrea said. I'll keep an eye on Dick for you, Gilbert.
Thank you, dear,
he said.
Jetty, love, are you ready?
As I'll ever be, she said. Goodbye, sweetheart.
I watched as they moved across the lawn, the pinkish-blue light of dawn growing stronger. Instinctively, we moved toward the door, away from the growing sunlight. Aunt Jetty was moving farther away, fading. Aunt Jetty, wait! I cried, running after her. I threw myself into her misty form. I felt her arms circle around my back as I sniffled into nothing.
I would have gone crazy by now without you. You helped me find out who and what I am. You let me know that it was okay to be myself. You gave me a place to go when everybody else in the family seemed determined to change me into something I wasn't. No matter what I did or what I was, you loved me. I just want you to know that I love you, too.
Oh, baby girl, she crooned. Goodbye.
Goodbye, I said, blinking rapidly to clear the tears from my eyes. They walked away into the distance, fading as they moved, until they were whispers of vapor against the backdrop of morning. I moved quickly up the steps, through the protective cover of the front door. Inside, in the foyer, Dick wiped at his wet cheeks.
Dust in my eyes.
I nodded, hugging him.
Me too.
Andrea and Dick raced home against the rising sun. Gabriel led me upstairs to our room and went downstairs to secure the doors. Shaken, I stood staring into empty space for long, silent moments. She was gone. Aunt Jetty was really gone. Without warning, without giving me time to prepare. I could only be grateful that she'd let me say goodbye. I couldn't believe she'd actually left me. But I understood why she did it that way. If she'd warned me, I would probably have tried to talk her out of it, made her stay. Aunt Jetty deserved to be happy. She'd put off leaving to watch over me, to keep me happy. I was married now. I had a family. It was time for me to stand on my own 2 feet and be a real grown-up. I wiped at my eyes and tried to focus on the moment at hand. I would only be a bride once, Lord willing. I didn't want to be a maudlin one. I carefully stripped out of my dress and lay on the bed, waiting for Gabriel. He came into the bedroom, having shut Jamie's door and locked all of the other doors. He cleared his throat.
What a disappointing groom I am. I feel like most of my work is done for me.
I propped myself up on my elbows.
Well, not all of your work. I didn't get that far.
He shrugged out of his vest and tie.
Glad to hear it. We do need to get some rest, though. We've got a very early flight tonight.
Are you going to tell me where we're going, or am I going to find out when we land? I asked as he crawled onto the foot of the bed, his pants and shorts left rumpled and forgotten. He bent to kiss the delicate bone of my ankle.
I have 3 words for you. Hampshire, Bath, Southampton.
He punctuated each location with a kiss to my calf, my kneecap, my thighs. He settled between them, tracing the line of my collarbone with his nose before nipping lightly at my throat.
3 words that have to do with Jane Austen, I exclaimed.
I flipped us over, straddling him, and bounced happily on the bed. Considering my position and his state of undress, this was an incredibly effective way to start the honeymoon. Gabriel shuddered under me, and I giggled. Sorry.
No, you're not,
he growled softly. He pushed my bra aside and caught a puckered nipple between his teeth. Gasping, I ground down and tugged gently on his hair, drawing a hiss from him. His fingers tightened at my back, keeping me pinned close as his fangs dropped and worried the skin over my heart.
You're right.
I whispered kisses over his brow, yelping softly when he ripped my panties away and rolled me back onto the bed. He hovered over me, pushing my hair away from my face.
I know we have travel issues, but I wanted to do something you would find romantic. We're only going to get one honeymoon, one marriage, Jane. This is it. We're going to do it right.
And with that, he slid home,
joining our bodies for the first time as man and wife. I sighed happily, and he tipped his forehead against mine. I whispered, "I love you, Mr. Nightingale."
"I love you too, Mrs. Nightingale."
Chapter 20. Eventually, it will be time for your child to leave the nest. You may find that you are lonely, that you miss taking care of someone. Please resist the temptation to turn another vampire immediately. You need some time to rest. Siring for the Stupid, a beginner's guide to raising newborn vampires. Considering our travel history, we handled the honeymoon pretty well. There was only one blow-up, and it was centered on who set the wake-up calls for a.m. instead of p.m. We toured the villages of England. Walking along the roads at night, visiting the carefully preserved manors, you could almost imagine that time had stopped. You could see horses and carriages ambling down the lanes. Imagine ladies in bonnets and gentlemen in beaver hats. I felt a connection to my favorite books that I hadn't imagined possible, just by seeing the places where they were set. Oh, and did I mention the constant sex? Somehow, post-wedding sex seemed completely new. Not to mention the fact that there were no nosy teenagers within a mile radius. We could be as loud as we wanted. We were tossed out of 3 hotels because of complaints from the other guests. We returned home a week later, exhausted and pleased, and burdened with a ridiculous amount of souvenirs and gifts. On the drive home from the airport, Andrea and Dick called to tell us that Jamie was waiting for us at the house. He'd been a perfect angel the whole week, Andrea swore. He'd taken care of Fitz, had run to River Oak several times to check on the house, and had even been helpful with Ray when he rose, explaining the various perks and pitfalls of being a new vampire. So far, Ray had lived up to his word to be well-behaved. He'd discovered that he didn't like bottled or donor blood, but actually preferred to hunt deer and drink from them. When I thought about it, it made a certain amount of sense. Ophelia had already visited several times to monitor Ray's progress, and while she gave him several stern warnings about what happened to new vampires who revived old blood grudges, she was pleased that we'd managed to resolve the situation without bloodshed that she had to clean up. We pulled onto the road leading to River Oaks. Gabriel smirked at me, threaded his fingers through mine.
"We could turn around, you know, take another few days, get thrown out of some hotels in Nashville."
"You are ridiculously proud of that, Mr. Nightingale," I said.
"Even Dick's ridiculously proud of that, Mrs. Nightingale," he reminded me.
I smiled. We'd been calling each other by our married names all week because it amused Gabriel, and it seemed sort of appropriate considering our Austenian setting. "Well, as sad as I am to end the honeymoon, I'm glad to be getting home. Believe it or not, I missed Jamie," I said. "It's sort of nice coming home from vacation with gifts for our boy."
"Well, let's hope that he didn't follow the traditional teenage route of hosting a huge party and trashing the house while we were out of town."
I chewed my lip thoughtfully. "Maybe we should stop here and walk the rest of the way, so he doesn't hear us pull up."
"That would be
a fun surprise," I suggested. Gabriel considered it.
"Agreed."
We pulled over near the end of the driveway and cut the engine. We each grabbed a suitcase and swiftly made our way up the drive, moving soundlessly over the grass. From the distance, I could see Jamie sitting on the porch swing. And he wasn't alone. Ophelia was straddling Jamie's lap, kissing him passionately as his hands trailed up her bare back. She groaned, grinding her hips down against his as he nibbled along her jawline to her collarbone. "What in the name of Barnes and Noble do you think you're doing?" I dropped the suitcase. Gabriel looked caught between confusion and horror and the urgent need to giggle hysterically. Jamie scrambled to his feet and pulled his jeans up. Ophelia rolled her eyes and slipped back into her dress.
"Jane, I'm sorry,"
Jamie cried. "You are grounded," I yelled, "and responsible for cleaning that seat cushion." Gabriel pressed his fingertips into his eyes as if he could push the images out of his brain.
"Jamie, what's going on here?"
Jamie looked sheepish, standing in front of Ophelia while she finished dressing.
"Well, see, Ophelia explained a couple of things to me, and, we've been seeing each other while you were out of town, and
Yeah, I was wondering, Jane, whether you would be okay if I moved out.
My eyes narrowed at Ophelia. She had the good sense to look a little uncomfortable. And where were you thinking of going, Jamie? Ophelia cleared her throat.
Jamie, darling, maybe this isn't the best time, she said.
Ophelia,
Jamie prompted, his voice stern. I raised my eyebrows.
We talked about this. You'll feel better once it's out. And you owe it to Jane.
I was the one who was responsible for your turning, Jamie, Ophelia mumbled.
Indirectly. What do you mean? I demanded. She looked down at her twisting hands and mumbled,
I know who hit him with the car.
All of the blood seemed to rush through my ears, creating a tornado of sound. For a moment, I actually saw red. The edges of my vision were tinged a violent crimson, creating a tunnel that focused on Ophelia's face.
Explain, I growled. Ophelia nibbled on her bottom lip. I wanted him with me. I've tried having human lovers before, and ever since the social mores regarding age difference changed, it just hasn't worked out. They age, I stay looking like a mall rat, and they eventually get questioned by the police. It's uncomfortable for everyone. I saw Jamie at the quilt festival this spring, and I just fell for him. I watched him for weeks. I watched how he behaved around other kids, how he treated girls. I knew he was just the right mate for me. He's sweet and kind, but strong and resilient. He has leadership abilities that will mature as he grows older. And he's smart enough to let me have my way on occasion, but he will eventually be able to stand up to me. Jamie frowned.
Eventually?
I couldn't turn him myself, Ophelia admitted, because of Georgie. I'm banned for centuries, but it didn't stop me from following him and talking about him constantly at home, his sports teams, his favorite restaurant, his route at work, which was a mistake because Georgie wanted to meet this boy I found so fascinating. She just wouldn't let it go. She asked over and over, and she couldn't believe I was actually saying no to her. I hardly ever say no to her, which is why I think she took it personally enough to wait until I was at the council office, steal the keys to the car I was using to follow Jamie, sneak out of the house, and drive around looking for him.
Are you saying,
my little sister ran Jamie down with the car because she overestimated her ability to see over the steering wheel, Ophelia said, biting her lip. My jaw went slack. It was really difficult to figure out whom to be angry with. It felt wrong to be angry at Georgie since she was basically a child, but she was about 300 years older than I was, and she should have known better. Then there was Ophelia, who should have at least hired some sort of supernatural nanny to keep her sister from these dangerous hijinks. But it all worked out, you see, because I got to meet Jamie, and we're in love, and we get to stay together forever, she said, smiling sweetly at him. And Georgie's mistake, that's part of the reason I insisted that he foster with you. I felt responsible for what happened to him, and I knew you would treat him well. I needed someone who was a good person, who would teach him to be a good, responsible vampire, but was too old for him to find attractive. Hey, I barked. What if Jamie didn't want to be turned? Did you think about that? Well, since you turned him, he'd be angry with you, not me, so that worked out too. It's sort of perfect, don't you think? She turned to me, grinning smugly. You know, you're taking this a lot better than I expected you to. I slammed my fist into the bridge of Ophelia's nose. My hand actually smarted from the blow. She went flying over the porch rail and ass over tea kettle into the rose bushes.
I had that coming, Ophelia admitted. That was your one free shot.
Oh, hell no, Missy. You must be losing your mind if you think that's the last of it. There will be multiple shots. I'm going to give you a 21-damn-gun salute. If you're going to be dating my boy, there are going to be rules and family dinners on Sundays. Every holiday will be celebrated at my house. You can start your own traditions when I'm dead, and there will be lots and lots of digs about how you're not good enough for him.
I think a cold chill just dislodged a disc in my spine, Gabriel muttered, shivering. Sort of makes you rethink that whole eternity together thing, huh?
Jamie said, lifting Ophelia from the ground.
You don't know what you've brought down on yourself, Cookie.
I pointed my finger in her face and then turned on Jamie. And how do you feel about all this?
Well, At first, I was wicked pissed, he said, glaring down at her without any real heat. She actually looked contrite, but it passed quickly. But the bad part's over, right? What's done is done. And Georgie's apologized. She feels just terrible about it. Besides, it was kind of cool to hear Ophelia tell me about the whole stalking me thing. I've never had a girl go to quite those lengths to get my attention.
Yes, she's a regular bunny boiler. Are those nicknames going to stop soon? Ophelia asked. No. Condescending nicknames that imply that I can't remember your real name are all part of the bitchy in-law package, I told her. And no, Jamie, for right now, I don't think you should move out. I'd be more comfortable if you stayed with me. It's not right for you two to live together right now. Jamie shouted,
What? You live with Gabriel before you were married?
This has nothing to do with marital status, I said calmly. This has to do with your emotional maturity and the fact that she was indirectly responsible for you being run down with a car, which implies a certain disregard for personal safety. I'm going to have to insist that you stay with me for at least another year, or until you can give me a well-thought-out plan on your living arrangements, including how you plan to integrate Georgie into your life together.
Can she do that?
Jamie demanded. Ophelia nodded hesitantly. It's within her rights as your sire, she said, her tone quickly becoming acidic. Though she should realize that Georgie is none of her business, and she would be wise to leave my sister out of future arguments about our relationship. Driving incidents aside, I have never neglected my sister, and I won't start now. Good. You can bring her to Christmas dinner. We'll take a big family photo involving ugly holiday sweaters.
Ah, Jamie groaned. That is so lame.
Well, that's me, Jane, Queen of Lame, and I'm only putting you through this embarrassment and hardship because I love you. There was genuine delight in his smile when he heard this. He hugged me, and I felt the depth of his gratitude and affection like a humming melody from his brain. His face shifted into an expression of crafty nonchalance.
Do you love me enough to let me borrow your truck to take Ophelia to the drive-in?
I tisked, kissed his cheek, and gave him a bone-crushing hug. Not on your life.
Again with the lame.
His face fell.
Come on, Ophelia. Let's go upstairs.
Keep the door open, I called as they ascended the steps. Gabriel winced as Jamie slammed his bedroom door shut.
Maybe we should have stayed in England.
I shot him an amused look, wrapped my fingers around the back of his neck, and pulled him in for a kiss. Nah, it's good to be home.
This has been an Audible Inc. production of Nice Girls Don't Bite Their Neighbors, written by Molly Harper. Narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Executive producer, Kristen Lang. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2012 by Molly Harper White. Production copyright 2012 by Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.